Last week, we kind of talked generically about obstacles. And today, as we continue to study how God used obstacles in the life of David to shape him, we're going to look at a particularly difficult obstacle that we've surely all faced at one time or another. Someone you met saw something in you that they admired. And when they first met you, they cared for you. And they declared their allegiance to you. They loved you. And something changed. They became suspicious of you. They felt threatened by you. They began to do and say things to hurt you. Suddenly, you felt like you needed to hide from them, run from them, protect yourself. Their love seemed to have turned to hate. I want to proceed from here with some level of caution, because the account that we're about to read, which you're probably are familiar with, I don't believe it should be taken to be the explanation behind every falling out between friends. Sometimes it's just plain immaturity or selfishness. But I do think it's appropriate to look beyond that to what God is doing in our own lives because of that, regardless of whether it's just stupidity or something more sinister. Because God may be doing something in our lives that He can do no other way than through that, as much as we don't like it. So if you're in 1 Samuel 18, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. I like this picture. That was a really good picture, I thought, of the story we're going to be in today. Last week it was Goliath, David and Goliath, right? David had to trust God to face this 10-foot-tall guy. He is no possible way this little shepherd boy with a slingshot and his shepherd staff could ever defeat this guy. But he trusted God for it. But if you remember, David had some obstacles that he had to face before he could even get to Goliath. He faced quite a bit of opposition. David, you can't do that. First of all, his brother, David, you just came out here to see the show. Go back home to those few sheep you're supposed to be taking care of. What have you done with those? But David pushed through those, and he finally comes to this big obstacle. And he declares with faith that God is going to get this guy. David's going to be the tool. And he's going to make the Philistine army look like a bunch of goofballs, defeated by this little teenager with a rock. Now that was a turning point for David, but it was also a turning point for Israel. The armies of Saul were scared to death of Goliath. He starts threatening them. What do? They run back to their camp like little scared kids. But here comes, ironically, this kid who defeats Goliath. And it can only be explained by the power of God. He declared that before Goliath was defeated, David declared that. And so it bolsters the Israeli armies. And they charge down after the Philistines and they wipe them out, this army. And they come back and they plunder their camp. And so David is used of God to encourage the Israelite army, and, by the way, the nation of Israel, that God can defeat their enemies. Following this miraculous victory, David experienced God's blessings, some really great things. Now, if you're in chapter 18 of 1 Samuel 17, back up to chapter 17, the last two verses. This is after David has defeated Goliath and all these things have gone on. And as soon as David returned from the striking down of the Philistine, Abner, which is David's captain, or Saul's captain, took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. It's a little bit grotesque. But Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." If you remember anything about Saul, he should have known who David was. He supposedly liked this kid when he came into his court the first time to play the harp for him. And David, for a while, was running back and forth between Saul's court and his dad's sheep, taking care of the two of them. But Saul loved David instead. And he, not only was he playing harp, he also made an armor bearer. I'm not sure about you, but if I was David and I had this position with Saul, I'd be a little bit confused. Just, well, who are you, boy? Don't you know? But we don't get that. The text doesn't give us any indication of what David might have felt. I don't think we want to get too distracted by that, because this is an indication of what's about to come for David. Saul has moved from concern for David and his family to, at this point, kind of apathy. Who are you, kid? Who's your dad? But God is still at work. Read now read chapter 18, verses 1 through 5. As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, but not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David, and his armor, and even his sword, and his bow, and his belt. And David went out and was successful wherever Saul sent him. So that Saul set him over the men of war. And this was good in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Saul may have forgotten David, but God did not. And God begins to bless David with all these different things that are more valuable than the things that were promised to the one with defeated Goliath. Remember Saul had made some promises to his army. Hey, whoever's going to defeat this guy, you're going to get all these great things. We don't know if David got those things. God doesn't tell us. But David did get some things. He got friendship with Saul's son Jonathan. A lifelong friendship. I mean, these guys it says their souls were knit together. This is just a beautiful picture of best friends. It's probably one of the most descriptive picture of best friends in the entire Bible. These two guys. And David was faithful to Jonathan even beyond when Jonathan died. He still maintained his respect and his love for his friend. David also gained a permanent place in Saul's court in his service. He got this position. He was no longer going to be running back and forth between the palace or the king's court and his farm, his dad's farm. Finally, David was successful in everything that Saul gave him to do. He was blessed by God. And one of the things that kind of results, because he was blessed in everything that he was doing in Saul's charge, Saul put him in charge of the men of war. Also, David was accepted and respected by everyone in his new position. So finally, things were going well for David. After all the opposition he faced, when he wants to go to Goliath, he defeats Goliath and things seem to turn around for him. Everything seems to be going great. And he was also gaining some popularity. If you read verses 6 and 7, as they were coming home when David returned from striking down the Philistine, the women came out of all the cities of Israel singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated. Saul has struck down his thousands. They could have stopped there and been just fine. But then they said, but David has struck down his tens of thousands. What a reception David has received. I mean, certainly they come out to greet the king, but word has reached back, has come back to town, and the word has spread all over that what has happened with Goliath. David killed Goliath. But because of that, the Philistine army was thwarted. And you kind of have this picture of, I picture in my mind, got this rock star mentality. David comes into town falling behind the king, and the king's, Saul was a tall man, as you remember. He was head and shoulders above everyone else. He was a big, goodly looking man. And here comes David, who also was not bad looking, according to the scriptures. He was younger. And he's falling behind. And I can just see these teenage girls going, oh, David! as David walks by. And Saul, naturally, becomes a little bit upset by this. He wasn't pleased with the attention that David was stealing from him. The Bible says that Saul eyed David from that day on. So, now we have another turning point for David. Things are going to get a little more difficult for him. From love to apathy to suspicion, Saul's view of David had certainly declined. It was about to get much worse. Skip down to verses 10 through 12. The next day, a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul, and he raved within his house while David was playing with the harp, as he did day by day. Saul had his spear in his hand, and Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, "I will pin David to the wall." But David evaded him twice. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. Here's that harmful spirit again. We mentioned this, it was in last week's text as well. And we said last week that I don't want to get too off track here, but this harmful spirit from the Lord is a demon who God allowed to come into Saul and torment him. And I want to emphasize that because it's important for us to understand that what Saul is doing with David, God is orchestrating. Because God is doing something in David that can be done in no other way. David is dodging spears, literally, because God has allowed an evil spirit to come into Saul to bring David into the presence of Saul and be playing the harp to calm him down. And in the midst of this, Saul snaps and flings the spear at him. "I'm going to pin this little rat to the wall. Tired of hearing about him. His 10,000. See about those. You can stick to the wall as well as anybody. And my spear is going to be the thing that does it." Now, if I was in this position, I might be tempted to ask, "Is this really necessary, Lord? I mean, I'm dodging spears. I just got done cutting the head of this 10-foot guy off. And now I'm dodging the spear from the king, who should be patting me on the back and should be giving me all these things he promised. What gives?" Saul's attitude towards David had become one of fear. And it's repeated three times in this chapter that Saul was afraid of David. Now, in his fear and confusion, he appointed David as commander of 1,000, according to verse 13. And that was certainly ordained by God, because David was now given the opportunity to do two things. One, to gain some experience as a leader, but also he gained more respect of the people that he would one day be king over. That was pretty much the extent of God or of Saul's grace to David by putting him over these 1,000 people. We won't take the time to read all the text, but I want to hit some of the highlights of Saul's antics against David. We already know that Saul had tried to kill David himself by throwing the spear at the wall, hoping to get David between the spear and the wall, but it didn't work out that way. In verse 17, you read, "Then Saul said to David, 'Here's my elder daughter, Merab. I will give her to you for a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles.' For Saul thought, 'Let not my hand be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him.' I'll give him my oldest daughter. And the Philistine, because he's going to want to be my son-in-law, he's going to be trying to earn my respect, so he'll be out fighting against the Philistines will get him." But then, at the last minute, as he's about to give Merab to his oldest daughter, to David, he reneges and gives him to somebody else. Well, that's okay, because Saul's other daughter, Michal or Michal, however you say it, loved David. And so Saul thinks, "Well, I'll give him some Michal, and he'll be so distracted that the Philistines will get him." And then the fifth one, verse 25, then Saul said, "Thus you shall say to David, the king desires no bride price except 100 foreskins of Philistines, that he may be avenged of the king's enemies." Now Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. Here he is again. David says, "I can't take your daughter, Saul. I have no dowry to give." And Saul thinks to himself, "Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not a problem, David. I've got it solved. Go kill 100 Philistines for me." 100 Philistines? That's a lot of people, guys. That's way more than we got in this room right now. And Saul says, "Go kill them. Bring back some evidence, and you can have my daughter." And his thought has nothing to do with avenging the Philistines. It's, you take on 100 guys. I mean, David is, he's able to kill Goliath, but 100 people? This guy's going to, David's going to meet his demise pretty soon, Saul thinks. Well, that didn't work either. So in chapter 19, Saul speaks to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants. And he says to them, "You guys need to kill David." Then in verse 9, again a harmful spirit from the Lord comes upon Saul, and Saul again tries to pin David to the wall with a spear. And then the next verse, it kind of gives the story of David escapes that night, goes back to his house, and then Saul, still angry, sends messengers to surround David's house and with the direction that when David comes out, he'll kill him in the morning. And David's wife was able to save him. Since they never saw David leave his house, the messengers go back to Saul and they say, "Hey, he never came out." So Saul says, "Go back and get his bed and bring his bed here. I'll kill him. Bring him here in his bed and I'll kill him." This guy's nuts. This is what David is facing. He finally flees to Samuel at Ramah. And when David told Samuel what was going on, they go to Naoth, another town, and they live there together. But Saul sends messengers up there to get him. Now, if you're facing all of these oppositions and threats to your life, how effective do you think you'd be in doing what God called you to do? I mean, if you're literally on the run for your life, I mean, Saul was doing everything he could to kill David. Not just strap him down financially or scare him. He was trying to kill this guy. And as you look at those 10 things, in a minute I'm going to give you an outline, but as you look at those 10 things, David was under a lot of pressure, a lot of assault. But in the midst of this, it was satanic. I mean, the demons that were tormenting Saul, clearly that was satanic. Was going on. In the midst of this, God is doing something. Because there's a fear in Saul's heart. Now that fear was a result of two things. One, the fact that the Spirit had left Saul. But two, because the Holy Spirit was upon David. And it struck fear in the heart of Saul. And also, another thing that struck fear in his heart was that the Lord was with David. We're told that. Which is why David was successful in all those things. Let us not think that all of these things that were going on against David in any way hindered what God was doing through David. Any more than it should hinder us in what God does through us. Now, this morning, I did not include an outline in your bulletins because I wanted Howard to hand one out. Now, Howard, you can hand that out. I didn't communicate very well with Howard this morning what I wanted to have done. Because I wanted to hold off on the reveal. Here's David. He's gone through all of these things. I mean, Saul is out to get him. Throwing the spear. I'm trying to get the Philistines to kill him. Trying to get his son and his servants to kill him. All these different things. Saul's determined that he's going to stop David dead in his tracks. Literally dead in his tracks. Maybe you feel like you're facing an onslaught of attacks. And you're not perhaps to that same level as David. But sometimes it feels like it. Sometimes it feels like your house is surrounded, like David's house was surrounded. Maybe your house is invaded already. And you just want to throw your arms up and give up. But in the midst of all these completely insane attacks, David continued to be active in the service to the Lord. What was simultaneously going on with David? First of all, David was able to elude the spear several times. And then in verse 18, or chapter 18, verse 16, we're told that all Israel and Judah loved David, for he went out and came in before them. Verse 29, Saul's daughter, Michael, loved David. Verse 27, David arose and went along with his men and killed 200 of the Philistines. He was supposed to kill 100, he comes back with 200. That didn't work out so well for Saul, nor for the Philistines for that matter. Verse 30, when the princes of the Philistines came out to do battle, and as often as they came out to David, then David had more success than all the servants of Saul. And as a corollary to that, and he was highly esteemed. In verse 19, Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David, and they became best friends. Chapter 19, verse 4, Jonathan spoke well of David to his father. He says, Dad, David respected. This is after Saul says, go kill David. John says, Dad, no. And he speaks well of David to his dad. Verse 8, chapter 19. And there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and struck them with a great blow. So they fled before him. So he defeats the Philistines again. And then in verse 12, chapter 19, as his house is surrounded by these messengers from Saul, his wife, David's wife, lets him out of the window and David escapes. And then David flees to Naioth, or to Ramah, to be with Samuel. He ends up living with Samuel, this great prophet of God. David continued to thrive as he had when he faced Goliath. God was with David because David trusted in God. And so David, in the midst of this attack, and that's why I wanted you to have that sheet, because you can see on one side you've got, here's what Saul is doing, but on the other side, here's what still is going on in David's life. David is not hunkered down hiding. I can't do anything. No. He's actively following his God and actively defeating the Philistines, and God is blessing him, even as he's fleeing for his life and under attack. But it's not that David never felt overwhelmed. Now, turn to Psalm 59. We're going to close. 59 is going to be our last chapter. So if you want to turn to Psalm 59, leave 1 Samuel, that's fine. According to the superscription that precedes Psalm 59, David wrote this psalm in response to the situation where he's surrounded by Saul's men in his home. So here's David. Saul's men are hiding out around his house. David knows it. And his response is this in Psalm 59. Deliver me from my enemies, O my God. Protect me from those that rise against me. Deliver me from those who work evil, and save me from bloodthirsty men. For behold, they lie in wait for my life. Fierce men stir up strife against me. For no transgression or sin of mine, O Lord, for no fault of mine, they run and make ready. Awake, come to meet me, and see. You, Lord God of hosts, are a God of Israel. Rouse yourself to punish all the nations. Spare none of those who treacherously plot evil. Selah. Each evening they come back, howling like dogs and prowling about the city. They're bellowing with their mouths, with swords in their lips, for who they think will hear us. But you, O Lord, laugh at them. You hold all the nations in derision. O my strength, I will watch for you. For you, O God, are my fortress. My God in his steadfast love will meet me. God will let me look in triumph for my enemies. Kill them not, lest my people forget. Make them totter by your power, and bring them down, O Lord, our shield. For the sin of their mouths, the word of their lips, let them be trapped in their pride. For the cursing and lies that they utter, consume them in wrath. Consume them till they are no more, that they may know that God rules over Jacob to the ends of the earth. Selah. Each evening they come back, howling like dogs and prowling about the city. They wander about for food and growl if they do not get their fill. But I will sing of your strength. I will sing aloud of your steadfast love in the morning. For you have been to me a fortress and a refuge in the day of my distress. O my strength, I will sing praises to you. For you, O God, are my fortress, the God who shows me steadfast love. That's David's response. The tone of this psalm is one of desperation. And you can understand why. When we're under attack, it feels like the whole world is against us, doesn't it? I mean, we've been told that all of Israel and Judah loved David. And yet, one guy hates him with a passion. One guy. Because of that one guy, David faced immense pressure. And it didn't matter if all of Israel and Judah loved David. It was Saul that had David's attention. And it doesn't matter if everyone around us, if the whole church loves us. But if we have one person that's out to get us, it doesn't matter, does it? We can forget that. Because we're under such intense pressure. And it's not wrong. Here's David, as he's facing this pressure, he's crying out to God for deliverance. I'm surrounded by enemies howling like dogs, looking for something. But you, Lord, are my strength. In the end, David determines it doesn't matter if his enemies have him surrounded. His strength is God. God will be my strength. The temptation is to hunker down and not do anything when we feel those pressures. Wait out the storm. Serve God when things settle down. But we can't spend our lives doing nothing because of the fear of attack. We can give those fears over to our God. And then press on to victory. Whether our enemy relents or not. But it must not keep us from accomplishing great things in the kingdom of God. It can, if we allow it. Last week I had you write down on your outlines a Goliath that you felt you were facing. That Goliath was defined as the seemingly overwhelming task to which God had called you to do. I mean, whether it's witnessing to someone that you know you need to witness to, or whether it's, I don't know, whatever that big obstacle is, that Goliath. And so there's probably some obstacles that are keeping you from getting to that point. So this morning's message kind of ties in with that. Because we've already been thinking about the Goliaths that we face. Even if you weren't here last Sunday, I'm sure each of you can think right off the top of your head something that a huge pressure that is on you. So this week, as we close our service this morning, and we're going to sing our closing song, which is really ties in well with this, I'm going to ask you to cast your cares upon the Lord. I have a friend that when his kids misbehave and have a bad attitude, he makes them walk to a trash can and he says, throw that attitude away. And he makes them do this motion in the garbage can. Does that really do anything? I mean, can they really take an attitude literally and put it in a trash can? No. But it makes it real for them. And so this morning, as we can each think of some drastic pressure that is on us. Maybe it's a Saul who is honest. Maybe it's an obstacle of a, like David faced a brother who said, "Oh, you can't do that. You're just here to get attention to yourself." Whatever that obstacle or that pressure or that whatever that is, this morning as we sing our closing song, I'll give you the opportunity to come and throw that away. You can do it sitting at your pew just fine, and that's fine. But it might be helpful to us as we cast our cares upon the Lord to come to the front. There's not much space at the steps, but you can sit on a pew if you want to, you can kneel, but do something that makes it real to you that I am taking this care and I'm giving it to God.